takes not only a talented writer, but a keen observer to bring us right into a story and setting. And Jerry Apps has done that for many years, and we're lucky that he has a brand new book out for us to enjoy. I've had a chance to read it. I loved it. Larry Mueller here. Jerry Apps is a storyteller and author of many books. He's, I'm thinking here, Campfires and Loon Calls 1, Horse-Drawn Days, Garden Wisdom, Lessons Learned from 60 Years of Gardening. His most recent is a novel. It's called The Tamarack River Ghost. And Jerry, always a pleasure.
Always fun to be here, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Now, The Tamarack River Ghost, and this is like a lot of your fiction, I think, draws on some interesting and current threads.
That's true. And those who know my other novels, and this is the fifth one in the series, know that I invented a county in Wisconsin, Ames County, much to the consternation of some of my friends who couldn't believe that I should do that. But what I try to do in each of my novels, and Tamarack River Ghost is certainly one of them that does that, is to take a contemporary issue and then to examine it from a whole variety of perspectives, including the historical perspective. And in this case, the what's going on is a huge hog operation is planning to come into Ames County and build an operation that will have 3,000 sows in one building with a plan to raise for production 75,000 pigs a year. And that is both praised and cursed by the people in Ames County. Those who praise it are happy for the new jobs, they're happy for the tax base improvement, and those who are unhappy with it, well, who wants to smell the manure from 75,000 pigs? And they're also concerned that their wonderful Tamarack River that runs near where the planned hog operation will be, that it will be polluted from all of these hogs.
And you also look, and that's a really interesting topic in and of itself, but you also look at newspapers and how newspapers and the media in general are changing.
Exactly. And I, those who know me know that my son Steve is a newspaper guy. He's worked for the State Journal here in Madison for a long time. And so we talk about these things often. But what I'm trying to illustrate in this book as a secondary plot theme is what is going on, in my case, in this story, with the farm newspapers and how the decline in ad revenue because of the Internet primarily is leading to their demise. And my main character is a chap by the name of Josh Whitmore, who is a reporter for Farm Country News. That's the name of the newspaper I created. And we learn, as you read through the book, the struggles that these this is a regional newspaper that covers the Midwest, the struggles that newspapers face today as they try to be objective, try to be ethical, try to do the best job possible in examining issues and perspectives, do in-depth reporting, in-depth research, how they're, in the case of this newspaper, how all of that is a losing battle, as the newspaper does eventually, to give away a little of the plot, go under and is replaced by an electronic model.
Mm-hmm. By the way, while I'm thinking of it here, let me give the phone number, which I haven't done yet. If you'd like to join in, have a question or comment for Jerry, I hope you'll join in. Maybe have a question about this book or a comment about his previous books. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Can post a question or a comment there, and certainly we'd love to hear from you. Maybe tell us a little about the community, because I think it's an interesting.
Well, the Tamarack River Valley is a community that goes back to the 1850s. It's settled by mostly immigrant people. Germans and Norwegians, Welsh from Europe. And they, for many years, were small-time family farms. And also, there's a cranberry marshes on the western edge of this Ames County. And the community is struggling because as many of the small family farms have either consolidated, the farmers retired, and the land was sold to people living in Madison and Milwaukee and Chicago as recreational land, the community is really at a crossroads in knowing what to do. And those who are interested in improving the economic status, they're searching for ways of bringing a business and industry into the community, and that's mm-hmm. understandable. So the community is a fairly typical community that one would find in many places around Wisconsin. There are the old timers. I've got a couple of guys that are just great fun. They're in their 80s. They're old, two retired farmers, and everything, every issue that comes along, they have a discussion about it over their Wednesday morning coffee, and they argue with each other. Just
fun.
Yeah, you think they didn't get along at all, but they dearly love each other. And for the sake of the book, they provide some comic relief, but they also provide a practical reality because they translate the highfalutin university language that is in the book here and there. You know what the heck is going on when it comes right down to it, pig stink. That sort of gets right to it.
Jerry Apps, our guest. You can join in, too, with your questions and comments as we talk with him about his new book. It's called The Tamarack River Ghost. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or with your comments. And before we take phone calls here, not surprising from the title, there's a historical figure and a ghost who's watching over.
Oh yeah, what's the deal with the ghost? People ask me. What have you gone off the edge? Well, that could be, but the Tamarack River, it's true of many rivers. I made up the Tamarack River, but it's fashioned after the Wolf River in Wisconsin. And I suspect you could also say the Wisconsin, but in the logging days, the late 1800s, early 1900s, before the railroads got into the northern part of the state, the rivers were the railroad were the travel ways, and they were the ways by which logs were transported from the north woods to the sawmills. And the log drivers, in the spring of the year, in April, when the ice went out, the logs were rolled into the river, and the log drivers took these logs from northern Wisconsin on the Tamarack River to Lake Poygan and then to the sawmills on Lake Winnebago, of which there were many. And the ghost is a log driver who, while he attempts to break up a huge log jam, the logs collapse on him, they kill him and his dog. They're never found. He drowns in the river. And thus, people who generations to follow believe that the ghost of this log driver, Mortimer Dunn was his name, comes back regularly to both antagonize and protect.
With his dog.
With his dog, a little bell on the dog. In the dark of night, when the moon is down and the wind is up, people hear the tinkle of this little bell. And sometimes they even hear the logger's song, and it scares the bejeebers out of them.
Or even smell the pipe.
And smell the pipe smoke. Oh, yes, indeed.
Oh, man. Arden in Menominee, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to tell Jerry that one of his old fraternity brothers is still alive up here in Menominee, Wisconsin. And I have some of his books. And we've shown them to a lot of people, and we do enjoy them. I wish I had more money so I could buy some more. But of all the people that became a famous author, he was a kind of a nut in college. But I guess that's what it takes to be an author.
I should ask you to go on, but I won't.
Oh, well, man. I wouldn't say anything bad about Jerry.
Okay.
Except that I wish I could see him at a fraternity reunion once, and I hope he comes this year.
One of these times I've got to do that. This is difficult for people to understand, but I am working full-time these days, doing far more than I ought to be doing, at least according to my wife. But I'm having a ball doing it, too.
Like people ask me, how is retirement? And I said, well, I haven't figured it out yet. Yeah, so yeah. I'm in the same boat as you are, but we'd sure like to see you this September.
Well, he'll ponder it.
It's on my calendar.
Thanks, Arden. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. You've got, and I think you've had this in all of the books that you've had that are situated where this one is. A love interest of sorts comes in.
You know, I do. Pete, there are about three things that I think are important in fiction. I'll give away the secret. What secret do I know? One is to have a little suspense, knowing what is really going to happen. How is this going to turn out? Another one is to have a little mystery, even. This is a little weird. And then you got to have a little love interest. and that's true. That's in all my books.
Yeah,
and I try to do it subtly. I'm as far away from pornography as you could ever imagine. 50 Shades of Grey, this book is not. However, the Josh Whitmore, the Ag Reporter, he is quite taken by Natalie Carlson, and Natalie Carlson is a hard-nosed DNR female warden, first one in Ames County. The old-timers just can't believe that this good-looking blonde woman runs around with a pistol on her belt. So that's one of the topics of discussion. And, well, she and Josh, at first, do not get along at all. I mean, she... he thinks that she gives away the fact that the poacher that she's trying to arrest, that he's informed and let him know that she was coming, and he didn't. And so they didn't get along very well at first. But she would arrest her mother. I mean, she is really, she wants these folks in Ames County to know that she's not an easy pushover. Now, her background, she was an MP in the Army. I mean, she has good training, and she's a dead shot with her pistol as well.
Jerry Apps, our guest today, talking with him about his new book. It's called The Tamarack River Ghost. And we'll also visit with him a little bit about the documentary that was just been airing on Wisconsin Public Television, and where I would guess you could say that he's the star of. His eyes just went up a minute here. So we're going to talk with him about that, too. And, of course, take your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll be talking... and remembering George Vukelic, who was a good friend of mine, maybe a friend of yours, maybe somebody you listened to on the air or actually read his writings. He's a great writer. Vince Vukelic, his son, will be coming along to talk about a book that George wrote 50 years ago and that I've really enjoyed. And Doug Moe, columnist for the Wisconsin State Journal, will also be joining us to talk about George Vukelic and his book. And so we'll do a little remembering at around 11:45 or so. Right now, though, we're talking about Jerry Apps and his new book, The Tamarack River Ghost, and also we're going to talk a little bit about also his Wisconsin Public Television premiered a new documentary that focuses on Jerry's years growing up in Washera County, and and I think in a lot of ways represent or mirror what happened to a lot of us who are of Jerry's age or younger, growing up in rural areas. So it's a wonderful, wonderful documentary. I've seen it and enjoyed it very much. So I want to talk with him about that as well. So you may have already seen it on Wisconsin Public Television. You may have a question or a comment about it. And certainly if you do, I hope you'll join in. Again, 1-800-642-1234. Jerry, you're always, and I know you've got some other books you're working on. We weren't going to talk about them, but you always pick, you try to really pick some issues that give people a chance.
Yeah, I do. I subscribe to all the farm papers, and I don't know, three, yeah. four, five of them. And I read all the letters to the editor, and I try to keep up on what the contemporary issues are. But I'm also very much interested in the historical perspectives, yeah. because I work, most of my books, all of my books, have a historical dimension to them, and I've done a whale of a lot of research on agricultural research and on farming and agriculture in Wisconsin and in the Midwest. So I try to bring that into the books as well.
We have Wanda from Fond du Lac online, so let's go to her. Wanda, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, yes. Jerry, I was just wondering, are you going to be doing a book signing anytime in the wild, Princeton, Wild Rose, anywhere in that area?
Let me mention the three places where I'm going to be in the next few days. Okay. On Saturday, this Saturday, on December 8th, I will be at the Sheboygan Falls Library at 9:30. Okay. And then on the 15th of December. That's mm-hmm. a week from Saturday, 11 o'clock at the Historical Society Museum here in Madison. And okay. so those are the two events that are coming up. Unfortunately for you, I guess, I was at Wild Rose just on Monday at the library talking about this book.
I just actually had one more question. In your childhood, do you remember any of the Kurleski brothers?
Very well. I remember their folks.
Yep, Harry and Elsie. Butch Kurleski is my father.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yep. No, he used to do some work on your tractors and stuff, from what I gathered.
That's right.
I just wanted to say hi.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Do you get that a little bit when you go around?
A lot, sure. And that's always fun, the connections of families that, that's part of... Part of the deal, and what frustrates people no end with my fiction, especially, is that I mix in real names with my fictional names, and so they say, and some people claim, they come up to me and say, you know, I knew that guy very well, and I know they didn't because I made him up. That's always kind of fun too.
But a lot of times you probably, when you're thinking about some of those characters, it may be an amalgamation or...
Well, it always is. And sometimes it's not. I like somebody so much, I just, they're it. And so my friends around Wild Rose, the people I grew up with, are constantly discussing who that really is. Because I'll change the name often.
I wondered if you used names of friends or relatives.
I'm careful. I'm very careful in doing that.
Well, let's talk a little bit, certainly I don't want to forget about the book, but let's talk a little bit about that documentary.
Sure.
Because it's turned out to be a very popular documentary. I was looking, I thought we had, I guess we don't have any information yet, but... I'm not seeing it. Not seeing it. For some reason, we're having a little problem with messaging messages back and forth between us, between Judith and I. So we'll get that figured out. But this is I really enjoyed this documentary, and it must have been fun. How did it come to be?
Well, it's sort of strange. I have, over the years, given many presentations to a whole variety of groups, often on historic topics. And for a number of these presentations, Wisconsin Public Television would send a camera person over, and they would record it, and then they would show it. And so I have single presentations on horses, on barns, on a whole variety of topics.
Yeah,
and so finally, they said to me, "Well, what would happen if we would just sit down and just chat about some of the stories that you remember as a kid?" This was a year and a half ago. And I said, well, I don't know. I can tell you stories, all right, if that's what you want. Well, that's what we would like. So we were out at my farm in Wild Rose a year and a half ago, and it was in November when they started filming. And it happened to be these are fun stories behind the scenes. The biggest snowstorm of the year in Washera County last year was in November. And with the day that they're at the farm. And so here we are filming. And they've got the camera, and they've got the sound guy, and they got another sound guy, and they got the producer, and they're all set up. And my little kitchen at the farm doesn't amount to much. It's an old granary. But they got everything going, and everything is doing well, and they interview me for half an hour or so, and the lights blink, and they say, oh, geez, we must be, something is wrong here. We got to change the fuse, and they change the fuse. It wasn't the fuse. The lights blinked again, and they blinked another time, and the whole thing went out. And that was it. The power went out. That happens often, of course, in the country. And I said, well, you guys, don't you have any batteries? No, we're batteries. So that was it for the day. We pulled the plug, and we started doing it over again. Anyway, we did 10, 12 hours over the period of 6 or 8 months, interviews for this show, and it's about, it's an hour long is what it amounts to. And I thought somebody else would be doing the narration. Well, guess who ended up doing the narration? Yours truly. Another fun thing they did is to gather photographs from Wild Rose area. They invited people to bring in their photographs to the library one Saturday. I don't know how many people did. And they scanned them, and those the background photos are from that. Many of them are from that collection.
Oh, it's a great photos.
Now, there's something else that surprised me, Larry, with this show. We did some in-person premiere events, one in Wild Rose, one in Viroqua, and one in Green Bay in November. And we had as many as up to 600 people attended these events. I was dumbfounded. They would show, public television would show a few of the scenes from the show that people are seeing now. And then I would talk for a while and then tell stories and answer questions. And we had 250 people in Green Bay.
Wow.
I mean, unbelievable. In Green Bay, there were 250 people. And so we just had a wonderful time. That was a little bit of a reminder to me that maybe this thing has touched a nerve. And that people who have experienced what I experienced are reminded of their backgrounds, but they also want their kids and their grandkids to be aware of what it was like before electricity and before indoor plumbing and the party line telephone, and when our homes were heated with wood stoves. And in the wintertime, you'd close off, as we did. We'd close off most of the house and live in two rooms. Those are the rooms that had stoves in them. People just don't know.
And I bet there's some people listening today that would have a hard time believing that there are people alive today who actually grew up without electricity in their home.
It's a truth, and it's a quick story about that. I often talk to fourth graders, and I think the teachers bring me in because I'm kind of a historic artifact, some old guy who grew up without electricity, and they have me tell the kids what it's like to be without electricity, and I'm telling this story, and I bring an old barn lantern in to show the kids what that's like. And they're just sort of incredulous. And I'll never forget this little fourth grader. He's right in the front row, and he looks at me right in the eye, and he says, Mr. Apps, he said, I've been listening to this, and I know you have. And he said, now, you didn't have electricity. And I said, that's right. He said, how did you watch television? Now I have to explain to him that wasn't such a thing. He couldn't believe it. You mean there wasn't any television when you were a kid? How in the world did you make it?
Well, from the folks in audience services, Judith helped me out here. Jerry Apps, a farm story. That's the title of that documentary. brought in more pledges on the evening of the premiere than any other local program on Wisconsin Public Television in a single night in more than 15 years. They'll also receive so many calls from folks who have said that it resonated so much for them because they grew up on farms. They're looking forward to sharing it with their, as you're saying, as they're looking forward to sharing it with their grandkids so they'd have a better idea of what the experience was like.
Yeah, and I'm humbled. I'm really humbled by that. And I'm also, as my wife Ruth points out, the documentary is really a commemoration of my parents who lived through the Depression, World War II, raised three sons, and with income from 14, 15 cows and a cucumber patch and a few beans. I mean, I thought we were really doing well financially. What did I know? We weren't. People in Washera County at that time were not doing well. People all over during the Depression were not doing well. So I think it's important in the case of this film to let people know that, well, here my parents were, and my dad had a fifth grade education, my mother a seventh grade education. They were not well educated at all, but that doesn't mean they weren't smart. Sometimes we get that tangled up, smart and education. So I'm more than pleased now to, in fact, I'm surprised beyond belief with the reaction to the film.
It's been great. I know what you mean. My dad had an eighth grade education, then he had to quit school to go work on the farm.
That was the case with my dad. The deal was when you're old enough and big enough to work, you went to work. And my mother, and they pulled her out of school in seventh grade to work as a maid in town. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
She's, 13 years old, something like that. She's working as a maid.
But your dad, your mom and dad, but I was thinking of comparing my dad with your dad because my dad was very smart in a lot of ways. He could fix anything.
Well, and on the farm, you had to.
Yeah.
You really had to know how to fix everything. Not only that, you had to be a veterinarian, a very practical veterinarian. You had to take care of the animals. You had to know crops and soil and all that sort of stuff. So,
there's
a lot to it.
One quick story, and I may have told this before, but I'll risk it. My dad built a shed, and it was it was kind of a nice shed. I did it all by himself, and I thought, I like a shed like that. So I got the materials, and I got two buddies over. So there were three of us, and the three of us, I finally had to call my dad. My dad come over and actually help because the three of us couldn't do what he did. On his own.
And a lot of that was not, as we called it in the country, book learning. It wasn't that. These were skills that were passed on from person to person.
Tim in Madison has a comment. Hi, Tim.
Hello. Larry and Jerry. Jerry is such a good writer and always enjoy his writings and his books, so I'm very much looking forward to reading this. But I'm just curious, Jerry, some of your thoughts on... It sounds like what you're dealing with in that book is some of the things that we're facing now in Wisconsin, where some of the rural life is changing as we look at things like frack sand mining and the large CAFOs, and there's a lot of controversy about it and what it's going to do to natural resources, and yet the people obviously have to make a living. I'm just sort of curious from your standpoint with your growing up on a farm and what you're dealing with in the book, just some of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, that's a great question because that's precisely what I'm trying to do, especially in these novels, is to identify an issue that is contemporary and then to examine it from a whole variety of perspectives. Most people know, many don't. I was a professor of agriculture for 35 years here at the University of Wisconsin, so it's the sort of thing that I kept track of as the years passed, and now I'm through my fiction, through my novels, I'm trying to introduce an examination of these contemporary issues in a way that I think is interesting. It's through story. I have humor. I have these characters, both a sort of a primitive as well as sophisticated, and because that's the way communities are. Those are the sorts of people that are in a community, and we ought to learn to listen to them all, the young and the old, the informed and the not informed. That's all what's going on in my novels as I try to have all of these people interacting with each other. And at the same time, I try to engender in my work the notion that sense of place is important, that the seasonal changes and what that's like, and what it's like in fall when the leaves are turning color and the geese are flying south. So I add all of that little dimension. So that's in the background. But sense of place is also important in all my stories. And the people who live in these places, they know that, but often it's intuitive. They're not able to talk about it straight away, or they're embarrassed to talk about it. And once you get to my age, you're not embarrassed anymore. You talk about these things. And so that's I appreciate your comment very much, because that's exactly what I'm trying to do.
You're a good writer, and I will look forward to reading the book to learn a little more.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Thanks for calling. Doe in Williams Bay. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, well, I just want to tell you, I'm not from a farm, although now I live in a little town in Wisconsin, but I'm a Chicago girl from a very, very long time ago, probably longer than yourself. But you made me think of one of my favorite stories about a party line.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember what they are,
oh,
right?
Oh, sure.
And people today do not. But I grew up in an apartment in Chicago. And, I was 12 or 13 with a first boyfriend or a third or something. And I was going to call my boyfriend on the party line. On the phone. And I picked up the phone, and a voice said, "Someone is listening." And I said, "I am not."
Well, I'm very familiar with the party line telephone.
Oh, me too.
That was in our community where I grew up. And we had, I don't know, 12 or so people who, of course, were all listening. That's how we kept track of the news in the community. We'd never admit that, but that's exactly the case. The party line telephone was the wonderful way for a community to keep track of each other. And some women especially, they would use code words. They'd figure out ways of sharing information that they didn't want everybody to know. And so it was great. It was just great, great fun. And of course, we all had our own rings. And the and the rings, certain rings in our community, when we would hear three shorts, we all knew something. And I mentioned this in this
in the book.
Documentary.
Yeah.
We all knew, my golly, something exciting, juicy was happening, and we would rush for the phone and try and listen to find out what it was.
There we go.
Don't have to read that book.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, though. Chuck in Lake Delton. Hello.
You.
Great, thanks for calling.
I enjoy your books, and I just wondered how much gopher wood you burn in your wood stove.
How much gopher wood?
Yeah.
I burn mostly cherry. Can you believe it? I burn black cherry. Good.
Whoa.
Gosh, I've got a lot of it on the farm. And
when you bring in an armload of pine, you know, and set it down, you better go for more.
Oh, that's what you're getting at. Well, there is a gopher wood that people refer to, and I don't know what that is. Well, it's the same way with running water. We for a long time, the farm, we didn't have running water, and people would say to my dad, "Well, Herman, you don't have any running water here, do you?" And he said, "Oh, yes, we do." He said, "What you do is you fill the pail with water. If you want running water, you run with it."
There you go.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. We got a Facebook question from Laura, who wondered, says she always enjoys your stories, but she wonders who your favorite Wisconsin authors are.
Well, I've got to right off the top of my head say that Bob Gard is right up there. And why do I say that? Because it was Bob. And he's sort of forgotten today, but people just go online, you can find his work. Bob was a folklorist, a storyteller, a fiction writer, a nonfiction writer, a historian, and he was my mentor. Had Bob Gard not taken me under his wing, you would not be reading the books that you're reading today. Because Bob said to me one time, in fact, his little company, Wisconsin House, published my very first book. And I am forever indebted to Bob for encouraging me, publishing the first book, and then reading manuscripts after that and giving me suggestions. Then I suspect I should also mention August Derleth, whom many Wisconsin people know as one of our most accomplished writers, at least in terms of the number of publications that he produced, lived in Sauk City. Had some wonderful novels, also did nonfiction work, was an environmentalist. His Walden West book is a wonderful book. And there are a bunch of others that I could mention. But Aldo Leopold's one of my heroes. I read him again and again. Gaylord Nelson's work is interesting. Sigrid Olson really had come from Wisconsin originally and went off to Minnesota. And I could go on.
Well, there, and you've got on your website, by the way, you've got.
Yes, it's jerryapps.com. I keep forgetting to mention that. The most important thing in the world. My wife says I'm the world's worst market person. Just www.jerryapps, JerryApps.com. Check it out. They're all listed there.
Oh, Jerry, I know you got books in the works.
I do.
We'll be having you back for sure.
Let me mention one other thing quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Wild Rose Library has available the DVDs for this farm show that people are watching. And here's their phone number, 920-622-3835. 920-622-3835. Patterson Memorial Library, Wild Rose, the site for the documentary. And this is a little money-making opportunity for the friends of the library.
And actually, a caller, Lee, wanted to make sure that people know that libraries can get copies, just like Wild Rose did.
Exactly.
For sale, for community screenings and discussions through WPT's Wisconsin Public Television Reel-to-Reel program.
That's true. And Saturday, the 8th of December, this coming Saturday at 5 o'clock, you can watch the show again on public television.
Well, it's a real treat. Thank you so much, Jerry.
You're welcome.
Jerry Apps, he will be back, and we will visit with him again. It's always wonderful when he visits lots of people around that can really speak to us. There aren't a lot of people that can speak to us the way Jerry can. One person who had a similar talent for connecting with each of us was George Vukalik. And coming up next, we'll spend some time reminiscing about George, Papa Hambone, as he was called. His one and only novel has been just been re-released, and I had a chance to read it. And it's a great excuse to talk about one of my favorite guests. So I hope you'll stay with us right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.